What we're going to move on to now in the next series of four presentations are actually going to preview the four main chapters that are going to be in this publication. It'll come out late next year with the Pastureland Literature Synthesis. And we're going to start off with Dr. Lynn Sullenberger from the University of Florida. And Lynn and his writing team have been addressing the prescribed grazing conservation practices for NRCS. And the title of Lynn's presentation is Looking at the Science Behind Prescribed Grazing as a Conservation Practice. Lynn.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Pleased to have the opportunity to visit with you about the work that we've been doing. First, let me introduce the members of the writing team and co-authors on the presentation. Dr. Van Sant and Agarides from University of Kentucky. Dr. Alan Franzlubers, ARS Watkinville, and Lloyd Owens from ARS Coshocton. This is the approach that I'll use today. I'm going to first describe for you the prescribed grazing practice standard, talk about the process that we use to assess it, look at the literature, and then summarize some key findings. It's probably appropriate to start with the definition of prescribed grazing so that we have some sense of what we're focusing on here. NRCS in 2007 defined it as managing the harvest of vegetation with grazing and or browsing animals. Simple enough. So then let's look at the practice standard. If you're like me, before I got involved in this process, I wouldn't have recognized a standard if one hit me over the head. So let's talk about what a standard is a bit, and specifically relative to prescribed grazing. There are five components or purposes to this practice standard. And they all begin with this phrase, implement grazing practices that improve or maintain. And then following, for example, desired species composition and vigor of plant communities, quantity and quality of forage for grazing and browsing, and I can insert the word livestock, health and productivity. And then there are similar statements related to water, soil, and wildlife. So we have five general purpose areas: plant, animal, water, soil, and wildlife. All right, let's talk about the process then for assessing these different purposes. The basic question overarching all of the effort is, does prescribed grazing allow the purposes, those five that we just looked at, to be accomplished? Now, in order for us to get a bit of a handle on this as a writing team, we had to define prescribed grazing a bit more specifically. So what strategies, what grazing decisions are we actually talking about? So for purposes 1 through 5, we decided to look at this array of prescribed grazing strategies, including grazing intensity, grazing method, season of grazing and deferment of grazing, type and class of livestock, and then livestock distribution in the landscape. Unless I had this afternoon and several more, I couldn't cover all of that. So we're going to focus today simply on grazing intensity and grazing method. Now, perhaps just to help you visualize this a bit more clearly, essentially what we've defined is a 5x5 matrix, where across the top, we have the purposes of the practice standard: plant, livestock, water, soil, wildlife. And then down the left margin, we have those grazing strategies that I described. So essentially, we have 25 cells. And within each of those cells, we conducted a literature review to flesh out the literature related to that combination. As was indicated, this is a pastureland effort. Not focused on rangeland, but pastureland. And the process that we used was to reference primarily the scientific literature, refereed literature, specifically focusing on U.S. literature, although we did go beyond that a bit. And in the work that our group has done, we've cited about 600 papers. All right, so let's look at that literature, and we'll probably only look at 500 or so today. Yesterday, if you were in the symposium, I talked quite a bit about grazing intensity and plant livestock responses. So I've left that out of the matrix for today. We'll focus on grazing, grazing method across the board, and also grazing intensity effects on water, soil, and wildlife. So let's begin by looking at some plant responses, and specifically to grazing method. By grazing method, I'm going to talk about rotational and continuous stocking today, although there are other elements of that included in the discussion. Now, if you go into the literature on grazing method, you fairly quickly feel like you're kind of in a twilight zone because there's a sampling nightmare in that literature. It's very difficult to get a handle on. The objective, I think, in that literature is to characterize the average sward state. But in many cases, that hasn't been done real well. To do this, it requires careful consideration of sampling time and height. And in the literature, sampling strategy often limits utility of the data. So although a lot of people have looked at continuous and rotational stocking, not many of us have done it very well. But to look at some of the plant responses to grazing method then, I'm going to focus on forage accumulation, and I put it in quotes for reasons that I'll point out in just a minute, and then forage nutrient value. So just to give you some sense of the findings, rotational stocking in a set of 27 publications that related to this comparison resulted in greater, and again, in quotes, forage accumulation. Very few of us actually measured forage accumulation, but instead things like animal grazing days, livestock carrying capacity, and so on. But in 81% of those studies, there was greater forage quantity expressed in some way in rotational than continuous stocking. This has been an advantage that's been described over the years in a number of circles, and the obvious question that you might ask is how large an advantage? And there are 16 of those 27 studies where it could be quantified reasonably, and the average was 29%. So 29% additional carrying capacity, herbage accumulation, something quantity related with rotational stocking. I was interested in looking at this, and for the audience today, I'll go into this in a bit more detail. If such a difference is real, what's the explanation for it? One possible explanation could be greater average herbage accumulation rate. That could be associated with differences in photosynthesis, in differences in photosynthetic capacity of the existing leaf area, or perhaps differences in leaf age in these canopies. So let's look at a few of those questions. If you go to the literature, there are very few studies that address these kinds of issues. Parsons et al. Is an exception. And in this study, they looked at perennial ryegrass, rotationally stocked to an LAI of 0.5, or continuously stocked to an LAI of 1. Looking at days of regrowth during a regrowth cycle after rotational stocking with photosynthesis on the Y, this was essentially the response function that they plotted for rotationally stocked pastures. Now, at three different dates, day 10, 15, and 20 of the regrowth interval, they also quantified photosynthesis on the continuously stocked pastures. I took the average of those three numbers and extended that in this dotted line just to give some site reference for comparison. Basically, what you're seeing is that somewhere around day 7 of the regrowth period, the photosynthesis rates of rotationally stocked pastures begin to exceed those of continuous stocking, and the difference tends to accelerate over time, or at least to increase over time. Second issue, are there differences in the photosynthetic capacity of the leaf area? These authors addressed that issue as well. And they said much of the difference in photosynthesis was the result of a marked difference in leaf area, which is part of what we just looked at. But there was also a difference between sward canopies when compared at the same LAI. In other words, rotationally stocked pastures at the same LAI also had higher photosynthetic rates. And lastly, are the differences in photosynthetic capacity of the LAI due to different average leaf age? This is kind of a spaghetti plot, but it's not quite as complicated as it might look to start. We're looking at days of regrowth on the X. On the Y, we have the percentage of leaf area that is represented by leaves in three different age categories, growing, expanded, and older. and these are for rotational stocking. As you can see, at the beginning of a regrowth period, we have a relatively high percentage of older leaves, which the percentage diminishes by around day 10 down to around 20% as a function of the increase in growing and expanded leaves. Now, if we put continuous stocking beside that, in this case, we don't have a regrowth period per se, but seasons of the year when these pastures were sampled, you can see there's much less variation or crossover among the categories than what was observed under continuous. And if we, under rotational. And if we pull out just a couple of those categories to make some comparisons, these are older leaves. Again, the same plot for rotational. And if we're just comparing across the graphs here, what you can see is that rotational has a higher percentage of older leaves early in the growth period, but by somewhere around, you know, day five or day seven or so, then and throughout, continuously stocked pastures have a higher percentage of older leaves. If we look at growing leaves, again, rotational at a disadvantage early in that regrowth period, but then throughout the main remainder of the regrowth period typically have a higher percentage of young leaves. So just to summarize and relate back to this observation of greater forage accumulation associated with rotational stocking, this could occur due to greater LAI for R than C. It could occur due to greater photosynthesis for R versus C at a given leaf area index, and it could occur due to lower average leaf age for R versus C. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this one because it is a bit controversial. And the second issue then that could account for this difference is greater efficiency of herbage harvested by livestock. Rod Heitschmidt in 88 suggested that because intensively managed rotational type grazing systems facilitate livestock distribution spatially, we might decrease the variation in grazing pressure index, effectively improving the efficiency of harvest. Norton, 2003, suggested that livestock are more evenly distributed and counter more forage in smaller paddocks or at higher stocking densities. There's some data that address this issue. Barnes, 2008, reported a study where he looked at four different paddock sizes ranging from 1 to 70 hectares that accompany numbers of paddocks in the system ranging from 2 to 64. All systems grazed at the same stocking rate. 11 of the 12 paddocks, representing 2 years by three treatments, I'm talking about three lower paddock sizes, were grazed more uniformly than the 70 hectare paddock. And in Australia, they do things in a big way. Their small paddocks in Australia were 900 hectares. I generally don't have small paddocks of that size. But interestingly, the percentage of the area within the paddock that had herbage mass less than 800 kilograms per hectare, 6% for the smaller paddocks, up around 30 to 45% for the larger paddocks. Percentage area with herbage mass in a more average range between 800 to 1200, approximately two-thirds for the smaller paddocks, down to about 20% for the larger paddocks. Sol and Chapman suggested that greater homogeneity of utilization of R than C is partially responsible for greater forage accumulation. Reducing the occurrence of spot grazing increases the proportion of the pasture area experiencing a linear growth phase, which would be in this diagram by Sol and Chapman in phase two. So just a quick summary, the literature supports the concept that R-stocked pastures can be stocked higher than C-stocked pastures. Credible reasons include greater herbage accumulation and greater efficiency of utilization that then results in a more desirable situation for regrowth. Okay, let's move on, talking about grazing method effects on plant responses and look at nutritive value. The answer here is it depends, I'll show you an example of that. A study by Bertelsen et al., which was a very nice paper, they looked at crude protein in response to three different grazing methods, continuous stocking, or a 6 and 11 paddock rotation. They sampled pastures pre or post graze, and they took esophageal extrusus samples at the beginning and end of the grazing period. Now, if you'll focus on the white circles, you'll notice that here we have, at pre-graze pasture sampling, an advantage to rotational. At post-graze, we have no effect of treatment. At the beginning of the period, in terms of esophageal extrusa, we have advantage to rotational. But at the end of the period, over here, we have advantage continuous. So the conclusion then is rotational stocking results in better, the same, and worse forage nutritive value than continuous, depending on sampling. And I say that a bit tongue-in-cheek. So sampling issues are critical. And clearly, if you're looking at nutritive value data in response to grazing method, the sampling strategies have to be undertaken in such a way that the samples represent animal diets. All right, let's move on to some animal responses to grazing method. In terms of the effect on individual animal performance, in the survey, this includes 29 papers, 66% of those papers said that there was no difference between rotational and continuous stocking in individual animal performance. If we look at production per unit land area, again, the response is thought to be similar. 72% of the papers suggest that they're not different. Only 24% show an advantage to continuous, to rotational stocking. Question that we might ask is, we saw that, I'll take a drink here. We saw that 81% of the papers showed a quantity advantage of rotational versus continuous, but only 24 show this advantage in terms of gain per unit land area. So I was interested in this from the perspective of, does research methodology play a role? And I looked at fixed and variable stocking rate studies. In terms of gain per animal response to grazing method, if we split out the fixed stocking rate studies and the variable stocking rate studies, our conclusions are basically identical. The overwhelming response is that rotational and continuous are the same in terms of gain per unit land area, gain per animal. If we look at gain per unit land area, it becomes a bit more dicey because the fixed stocking rate studies overwhelmingly support a conclusion of no difference, but the variable stocking rate studies are much more mixed and give some credence to considering rotational greater than continuous to be kind of an equal response to rotational equals continuous. I was curious about this and thought about it a bit. Clearly, one issue relative to the methodology is that in a fixed stocking rate study, you hold constant one of the two factors that are used to calculate gain per unit land area, that being stocking rate. The other factor involved, average daily gain, is the animal response that has a very high CV value. So it would be very difficult to conceive of a large number of opportunities to detect differences in gain per unit land area in fixed stocking rate studies between continuous and rotational systems. Some of my colleagues in the past have stated that to achieve a fair comparison between continuous and rotational stocking, stocking rate must be the same for both methods. And I basically can say that I simply disagree. Let's look at that briefly. In a variable stocking rate study, we're comparing the treatments at the same forage allowance. Under fixed stocking rate, we're comparing them at the same stocking rate. Under variable, grade of forage production can be measured by changes in average stocking rate because we're adjusting that stocking rate through the season to accommodate forage production. Using gain per hectare as a measure of forage productivity makes no sense to me because, again, we're affixing one of the factors used to calculate it. So in variable stocking rate, we can compare forage production in terms of, indirectly, in terms of average stocking rate, but I'm arguing we should also measure forage accumulation directly. In a fixed stocking rate study, we have to measure forage accumulation directly, and it's rarely been done to make valid comparisons of forage productivity. I'm not making an argument in behalf of fixed or variable stocking rates. I think they both have their place, but clearly there are issues related to their use that we need to think about. Okay, let's move on to water and look at grazing intensity responses in terms of water. This study looks at the percentage of rainfall that became runoff, looking at a study from Hahn et al. 2006, three treatments, ungrazed, rotational stocking to either a 5 or a 10 centimeter stubble. And what you can see is that rotational stocking, in this case, the most intensive system to the lowest stubble, resulted in the greatest percentage of rainfall as runoff. Some summary statements made relative to the grazing intensity literature. Infiltration rates decreased as grazing pressure increased from moderate to high in a study by Usman in 94. Highest stocking density produced the greatest sediment concentrations in water, Owens et al. 89. Stream morphology was significantly impacted on smaller streams when grazing was intensive, Williamson 92. If we look at grazing method in water, fairly quickly, again from the Hahn et al. Study, he looked at three different treatments, and in this case, total phosphorus in runoff, continuous to 5 centimeters, rotational to 5 centimeters, rotational to 10 centimeters, and the treatment that had the greatest level of phosphorus runoff was continuous stocking to a 5 centimeter treatment. Now, I don't think we're comparing actually rotational and continuous with this, because rotational stocking to a 5 centimeter stubble is clearly a very different animal than continuous stocking that is sustained at 5 centimeters. But clearly there are significant issues relative to cover that relate to water quality. Percent soil surface cover by forage is strongly correlated to phosphorus and sediment load. Management is critical to ensure sufficient residual forage to reduce kinetic energy of rainfall. Just a couple comments relative to soil responses. Optimal grazing intensity, in other words, stocking rate, is needed to maintain vigorous vegetative cover. Sounding familiar here, I think. Cover is a key determinant in controlling soil erosion by wind and water. There are observations where grazing and stocking rate affect soil carbon and nitrogen accumulation and microbial biomass. We're going to look at one of those examples from Alan Franzluber's John Studeman, looking at soil carbon in response to cattle stocking rate here. There are zero stocking rates or ungrazed treatments, as well as the solid symbols, which are hay harvest treatments. As you can see, at the 0 to 20 centimeter depth or 0 to 6 centimeter depth, we tend to have an increase in soil carbon associated with grazing compared to non-grazed conditions and also compared to hay harvest. So the authors suggest that the results indicate moderate stocking will optimize soil organic carbon compared to unharvested or hay management systems. In terms of grazing method, in the literature that Alan reviewed, he noted there are essentially no data in the literature from the humid region of the U.S. to support a claim for positive effects of rotational versus continuous stocking on soil erosion or soil condition. He said that that effect may or may not occur, but there's simply no documentation to support a conclusion in either direction. I briefly, with much trepidation, surveyed the wildlife literature, found 52 papers that relate to pasture land. 65% of those reported grazing intensity responses. So a preponderance of the literature was looking at grazing intensity, a small percentage related to grazing method. Of those, as Leonard alluded to, a high percentage, about three quarters, were looking at avian responses. The literature suggests that birds associated with grasslands are declining in population faster than any other habitat type. In Pennsylvania, for example, 82% of the bird species associated with grasslands have experienced declining numbers in the past three decades. There is strong circumstantial evidence supported by Fuller and Goh linking increasing grazing intensity and decreasing bird abundance. Specifically, they attribute this to loss of nesting habitat, nest losses due to trampling and predation, and reduction of populations of invertebrates that, in fact, these birds use as a food source. Choice of grazing intensity, they suggest, then, should be evaluated in the context of a broad array of wildlife, not just a single high-profile species, which has seemed to be the case in many situations. Another thing to keep in mind is that management strategies relative to pasture land need to keep in mind the landscape scale, because we're talking about pasture land or a pasture, individual pasture, as a component of that overall landscape, and a landscape scale is a useful perspective in this situation. Lastly, then, in terms of grazing method, except for a few riparian studies with invertebrates, grazing method had no effect on wildlife responses, and there may be some need there for some additional studies. Let me wrap up with just a couple of closing comments. The most consistent and pronounced responses of all of the systems that we looked at are to grazing intensity as opposed to grazing method. So plant, animal, water, soil, and wildlife respond more to grazing intensity than method. A high priority then of conservation programs should clearly target maintaining appropriate stocking rates and sward cover. Just a couple comments about grazing method. There is what I consider to be compelling evidence and rationale that rotational stocking allows for somewhat greater average stocking rates. Research methodology has been a major problem in making comparisons between those two grazing methods. And choice of grazing method, though less important than intensity, is still significant in fine-tuning grazing practice. Thank you very much.